Thank you for tuning in to the Golden State Media Concepts Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm your host, Tate, and today we're going to be covering quite a few of the fights from this past weekend, covering from UFC 198, Werdum versus Miocic, and then we're also going to cover a little bit about the Bellator 154 as well. And then we're going to finish up by going over the rankings for pound for men, pound for pound for women, and then we're going to close out with a little MMA news. Stay tuned, and I will be right back with you. Okay, I'm back here. And first, I'm going to start off by talking about UFC 198, which was really built up to be a really amazing card. I think Dana and the UFC really went all out to really put together an amazing card in Brazil, bring a lot of the great Brazilian fighters home to, you know, just pretty much celebrate, you know, how much Brazil has meant to the UFC environment. And, you know, I was really excited about this, and it ended up being a pretty interesting night. Started off, you know, with Big Nog being inducted into the Hall of Fame, or being announced that he's going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, which I thought was a really good decision. But, you know, let's go into the fights, and we're going to talk about the main event first. I want to, you know, before I even talk about the results, one of the things that I've always thought, and that is, if you're a fighter, you really, and you're defending your title, never go home. It's just a bad decision. I've seen so many fighters in boxing and MMA who decide they can't wait to defend the title at home, or they want a big fight at home, and they always end up flat. And this, I really felt like this was one of those exact cases. When, you know, when the main event got here between Miocic and Fabricio, originally I was leaning toward Fabricio, and then as the week went on, I started leaning a lot more toward Stipe, and I kept on leaning there and leaning there. I couldn't figure out why, and then it hit me. It's like, you know what? Fabricio has so much going on. He's going back to Brazil. There's a lot of pressure for him to perform. There's a lot of duties for him to be, you know, here and be there. Take care of family, take care of friends, go see everyone. And, you know, I just didn't feel like his mind would be on the fight like it should have been. And then, you know, when I saw the weigh-in, I just felt that was just the case. I thought he was kind of doing like a victory lap before the fight even started. He was just so, I felt like he was so excited and so loose and having enjoying himself instead of being really focused on the fight. And, you know, when the fight started, you know, one of the things I noticed right out the gate was when Stipe came to the ring, he was strictly business. He was there to fight and prepared to fight a long battle and a long war. And then when Fabricio started coming to the ring, first off, the music, I even turned to a friend of mine and I said, is he coming to fight or is he going to accept the award at the Grammys? Because he was coming in, he was smiling, he was making faces, he was hugging people, giving everybody high fives. I thought he was going to pick up a couple of babies or two and start kissing them. He was so happy just to be in Brazil to fight. But he never looked like he was going there to fight one of the toughest guys in the heavyweight division. So the fight started, and, you know, everyone's starting to feel each other out. But Fabricio, even, you know, Fabricio's, he's fighting. But at one point, Stipe cracks him, and he just starts following him. And anyone that knows boxing or fighting in general, tell you, never follow a guy. Never chase after a guy. On top of that, he was following him. He's pawing at him like he's, like, you know, he's instead of cutting the ring off, he's following him like he's chasing him, pawing at him. And out of nowhere, Stipe just cracked him. And I mean cracked him. And he melted like butter. He fell. And he was done. It was over. And just like that, we have a new champion, which I'm actually pretty excited about considering I was born in the Cleveland, Ohio area. So it was nice to see Cleveland actually get a champion. You know, anyone from Cleveland that's listening, guys, you have a world champion who's proud to be from Cleveland. Embrace this man and make him part of the community, because, you know, he's very proud to be from Cleveland. He worked really hard to get to where he's at, and you know, he fought a really great fight and had a pretty spectacular and shocking knockout. As far as Fabricio goes, you know, I kind of looked at this as, If this fight would have been somewhere else, I think it would have been a totally different outcome. But I, like I said before, I felt like he was... There's too many responsibilities on a person who's going home. Especially, and it's not like going home where you're like, oh, I've been fighting in Vegas all this time and I'm going to go to LA and fight. No, this is, I've been fighting quite a bit in the U.S., and I'm going back home to Brazil with the heavyweight championship belt to defend my title for the first time. And I'm going to take, you know, I'm going to defend my title and I'm going to take care of all the responsibilities that come with being, you know, the hometown guy. You know, it was just too much. I just thought Fabricio made a big mistake even taking this fight in Brazil. I never liked that decision. And, you know, in a lot of the main fights, you know, the results might have been more favorable for the Brazilian fighters as a whole. But, you know, traditionally, when you go back, guys, when you go back and you look at fighters who have gone home to fight, and I mean, I even go back to, I think back to boxing back when Thomas Hearns decided he was going to do his last fight, and he decided to go back to Detroit. And if I remember correctly, I think he, like, twisted his ankle or broke his ankle in the ring. He had to stop. It was just a bad situation. I look at Gustafsson, when Gustafsson went back home to fight and he fought Rumble Johnson. Not a good decision there. There's just been so many cases after cases of when somebody goes home, there's too many distractions, there's too many things that can go wrong, and instead of you focusing on the most important thing, and that is taking care of business in that ring, you're busy taking care of business outside the ring. So that's pretty much my take on the main event. Now I want to talk about a little bit more about some of the main fights that were on the card. Okay, the first one I want to talk about is Shogun and Corey Anderson. And guys, talk about a good fight. It was definitely a really good fight. I personally thought, came out to Shogun as the winner, a split decision. But, you know, when I was going through and I was scoring the fight, I actually had it a close fight, but I actually had Corey winning it. Now, one of the things that I would always, you know, when you're looking at MMA, the biggest mistake that fighters make sometimes, in my opinion, and this is just one guy's opinion here, is that when it gets to the end of the round, gets to the end of the fight, close out the round hard. Close out the fight strong. And that was pretty much Corey's biggest problem. You look at that first round against Shogun, and he's handling himself very well. He's doing a great job. Right at the very end of the round, he gets cracked, he gets dropped, Shogun's on him. And I personally thought it pulled the round out for Shogun, in which I was actually leaning toward Corey winning the first round. But when Shogun dropped him, and, you know, and Shogun jumped on him, I thought that was enough to pull the round out. And then you look around and you look at the next round, and it's once again a situation where I thought Corey was doing a good job, making a good account of himself. I thought he was winning the round. He's looking good. Gets to the end of the round, and what happens again? Again, he gets cracked. He goes down. Shogun jumps on him, and in my opinion, it still wasn't enough for Shogun to win that round. But if a judge gave it to Shogun, I wouldn't be upset about it. And then the third round, I thought Shogun clearly won that. I mean, not Shogun, but Corey won that last round, which I had it 2-1. It ended up being a split decision with two judges going towards Shogun. I really didn't have a problem with it. But I always say, once again, close the round out strong. Okay, and now the next fight, which was actually Chris Cyborg's UFC debut. And ever since this fight has been announced, I really wasn't that impressed. I was happy to see Cyborg in the UFC because I think she deserves to be in the UFC. She's the best fighter, in my opinion, in the UFC, now that she's in there. But I thought she's been... It was her or Ronda Rousey for a while. I couldn't decide. And right now, I would say, you know, she's the best fighter in all of women's mixed martial arts. But she went up with, you know... I never thought that Lexi Smith had a chance. I never thought the fight would go longer than a round. I thought Cyborg would come in, smash her. And that's exactly what she did. She came in. She jumped on her. She squashed her like a bug. Bounced out. Was able to show, you know, hey, I celebrated. I kick some butt, I'm a bad woman, I'm in the UFC. But that's all it was. I thought it was more an exhibition than an actual fight. I really want to see Cyborg in the ring. If you were going to give her, you were going to give her opponent, I would love to see her, you know, as her first fight against, let's say, like a Kat Zingano, or, you know, if you don't want to put them up against any of the top names right now, like a Kat Zingano, Sarah McMahon, anyone like that. I just didn't see this as anyone that was going to give Cyborg a chance. I mean, any competition. And it was just that. It really was just that. An exhibition, guys. So, but, you know, what does this mean for Cyborg? And I was kind of curious. I was more interested in what happened after the round, kind of like the post-fight interview, than the actual fight. And the reason why that is because of the fact that I wanted to hear what Cyborg was going to say. And she kind of surprised me. She said she was, she's the Invicta, you know, champ. And she wants to defend her title. She'd be open to fighting again in the UFC at a catch weight. But she never really committed to saying, you know what, I'm going to go down to the 135 range, weight, and I want to go for the title. And I was disappointed in that part. Because I was really hoping that she was going to say, you know, she's in the UFC to stay. She's in the UFC to make her mark. But she didn't do that, you know. And then I did see, you know, I was reading. I didn't read the whole article. I just caught the title. I mean, just a little snippet of it where she was saying that, you know, Misha Tate keeps saying that she's always open to fighting Cyborg. And Cyborg pretty much just warned her, be careful what you wish for. You know, it was kind of that kind of a situation. I would love to see Misha Tate against Cyborg or any of the top fighters, because I really want to see how Cyborg stands up to some of the tougher, stiffer competition. Now, I do know that Dana had offered Holly Holm a shot at fighting Cyborg, and Holly decided to pass because she wanted to focus on getting her title shot, which, you know, honestly, I can't fault her for that. Why would you take a dangerous fight like Cyborg when the fact of the matter is you deserve another title shot or you deserve a rematch? So I don't want to get on Holly for passing. But I really would have liked to seen Holly Holm versus Cyborg, because I think Holly is the one fighter that's built perfectly, and her style really would, you know, really create some serious fireworks with Cyborg. The next fight I want to talk about is Jacare versus Vitor Belfort. And man, you know, Belfort, this fight, which was won by Jacare, Belfort just seemed old. He seemed slow, overpowered, outworked. It was just like, you know, Jacare just showed up. It was a guy that was going to work. He took his card, he punched into the clock and said, okay, it's time to work. He put his 9-to-5 in, and he hammered Belfort nonstop. And just, you know, he hammered him on the ground, he beat him down, and he made Belfort look like a guy that should not be considered for to be a top contender anymore. You know, and I'm someone who has followed Belfort for a long time. This fight to me showed me that Belfort is no longer a championship contending fighter. And I hate to say that, because Belfort, he's been a rock star in the division for a long time. But after seeing this fight, I'm like, you know what? You can no longer think of him as a championship contender. He's still a tough fighter, but not someone that I would consider a championship contender. Jacare, he is right in the thick of things. I'm really looking forward to seeing him get a title shot, because he's definitely going to be the one that's getting the next title shot. And, it's going to be interesting. Now, in addition to the UFC 198 fight, Bellator actually put on a pretty interesting fight card the same night. It lined up perfectly, so you could actually watch one and then go right into the next one. But the fight was Davis versus King Mo. And, you know, it was a decent fight. You know, I saw a thing where King Mo was very upset about the decision. He thought he won the fight because he thought he won the first two rounds. Personally, I didn't think either one of them really performed that great. King Mo was supposed to be the hard-hitting power guy. And he is. I mean, I've seen King Mo fight, and he's an amazing power hitter. Phil Davis' ground game is just, you know, it's on point. But Davis pretty much stayed you know, stood up with King Mo the whole fight. You know, it was a lot more strategy, and it was just a little more, it was action, but not a lot of action. It was an okay fight, but in the end, Phil Davis won, and, you know, Mr. Wonderful is now, you know, the number one contender for the title now. I'm really looking forward to seeing how Davis does when he fights for the title, but as a whole, it was just an okay fight in my book. You know, I think it'll be a much better fight for the championship later on, but that was just my opinion. When I come back, we're going to talk about, with all the great cards that have happened over the last few weeks or so, what has that done to the power rankings or the pound for pound rankings in mixed martial arts? So we're going to talk about that when we come right back. Stay tuned. Okay, we're back, and as I was saying before, we're about to cover the pound-for-pound rankings within the UFC, and it's not necessarily UFC, it's the pound-for-pound rankings and mixed martial arts all together. We're going to start off with the rankings for the women, and then we're going to go and we're going to roll into the men after that. And we're only going to rank the top five in each of those divisions. So, you know, when I go through and I look at it and I say, okay, who's the number five contender? And I look around, and my number five, and this is going to shock a lot of people, because she's probably one of my favorite fighters in the entire women's MMA. But the number five pound-for-pound ranked fighter for my pound-for-pound rankings goes to Miesha Tate. Miesha has been around for a long time. Miesha has been nothing more, nothing less than a beast her whole career. She's willing to fight anyone, anywhere, anytime, and I really respect that from her. And you know, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how she handles things at UFC 200 when she defends her title. You know, I look around and I say, she hasn't been able to do anything with Ronda Rousey. She's lost to Ronda Rousey numerous times. And then I look around and I say, I look at the fight with her and Holly Holm, and I give her all the credit in the world. I was actually rooting for her against Holly. Or not necessarily, you know, I had predicted that Miesha would win, and like I said, Miesha is one of my favorite fighters. But when it all came down to it, I thought Holly was handling business, with the exception of two incidences where Holly ended up on the ground and Miesha took advantage of it. And that's exactly what any champ should do. And I do not discount the fact that Miesha is champ, and I love the fact that she's champ. But she is my number five fighter. Okay, my number four fighter is just the person we just got done talking about. That's Holly Holm. Holly came out of nowhere and really took care of Ronda Rousey. I think she, you know, I really think she put a, she just, she put a beating on Ronda that I'm still not sure if Ronda can ever recover from. Holly is a tough fighter. She wants to stay active, but the fact of the matter is she walked in to a situation where she won the championship from Ronda Rousey, rode right into defending the title against Miesha Tate, immediately dropped that fight to Miesha Tate. And so for that, I make her my number four fighter. Now, my number three fighter is a person that we haven't seen for a while, and that is Ronda Rousey. Everyone looks around and they say, you know, Ronda, Ronda was, you know, this beast of a fighter, but Ronda hasn't fought in a while. When is Ronda coming back? You know, it's nice to see that Ronda's out training again and she's getting back into things. Ronda was this unstoppable force, and I think everyone forgets, because of the Holly Holm fight, everyone kind of forgets how dominant Ronda was. At one point in time, I saw pound-for-pound rankings where Ronda was on the pound-for-pound ranking with the men. And just because she had a bad day, it doesn't mean she's not one of the top pound-for-pound fighters in mixed martial arts, because I truly do still put her as one of the top. And, you know, and the reason why I put her, I'm putting her a little higher, is strictly because the person that, her least favorite person in mixed martial arts, I think it's safe to say, is Miesha Tate. But Miesha Tate did Ronda Rousey the biggest favor, and maybe, I mean, huge favor. And that is, she showed Ronda how to beat Holly Holm. Because before the Misha Tate fight, if Ronda Rousey would have went right into a rematch with Holly Holm, I think Holly would have smashed her again. And I truly think she would have smashed her. But after seeing the Misha Tate fight, and Misha laid out a blueprint on how to handle Holly. And the one person, and with Holly, it's Holly's weakness is take Holly to the ground. And I think everyone would say Misha Tate and Ronda Rousey are the two best ground fighters in the women's division. And with that being said, Ronda, who has beaten Misha Tate on a couple of different occasions, has already proven that she's a better ground fighter than Misha Tate. And so that's why I put Ronda even higher, because Misha showed Ronda how to handle Holly. Now, my number two fighter, and this is a tough one to say, but, and I never can say her name, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, which I can't say her name to save my life, so I'm going to call her Double J today. Okay, Joanna, she's the real deal. She has mad game in the ring. She has mad game out of the ring. Every time I see her, I just smile. She's a worker. She's busy. She's just technically sound. She loves being champion, and she'll do whatever it takes to keep her title. And I mean, she is such an impressive fighter, but she's my number two fighter in all women's mixed martial arts, which takes me to my number one pound for pound female fighter in MMA. And that's Cyborg. I have been the guy who has not been a big fan of Cyborg for a very long time. And I used to say, oh, she's fighting an Invicta. She's not really fighting the same caliber Ronda Rousey was fighting. But the more I watch Cyborg, the more I see Cyborg just dominating and dominating and keep on dominating. And you want to hear something scary? Each time I see her as she dominates and smashes opponent after opponent, she's getting better. That's right. Each time I see her, she's still getting better in each time she fights. And that's amazing for someone who's been doing it for so long. And, you know, she's really just, you know, she's coming on strong. Even, you know, and I just watch her and I'm just impressed. And even this past UFC 198, I mean, she just looked so impressive. And like I said, I wasn't really impressed with the opponent that the UFC had picked for her. And that was no disrespect to her opponent. I just thought Cyborg was just so much far more superior of a fighter. And so that's my women's MMA pound for pound ranking right there. When I come back, we'll cover the men. Okay, we're back, and we're covering the pound for pound rankings for all of the mixed martial arts and for the men. And I'm going to start out with my number five fighter, which is Robbie Lawler. Robbie Lawler has just proven that he is one of the five best fighters in all of mixed martial arts. He comes in, he fights hard, he doesn't back down from anyone. You can never count him out, ever count him out. Whether he's winning from the beginning all the way to the end, or whether he's coming back from behind, Robbie Lawler is going to fight. And he's just been an impressive champion. And, that's all you can really say about him is that he's willing to fight anywhere, anytime, and he can pull it off. My number four fighter is Luke Rockhold. And Luke's been fighting, and you know he's put up an impressive ranking. He's a hard, tough-nosed fighter, and you know I really was so impressed when he beat Chris Weidman. He really proved that, you know what, I knew it was going to be a tough fight, but I still thought Chris was going to win. And Luke came in and he handled business. And that's the thing about Luke. Luke is always going to handle business. You never catch him sleeping. You never catch him with an off day. He's always on and he's always ready to go. Now, my number three, and this is where everyone's going to attack me and go after me. I don't care. I'm going to tell you why my number three guy deserves to be in this ranking. My number three fighter, pound for pound, is Daniel Cormier. Great guy, super nice. But I want you to tell me, I want you to think, name a fighter not named John Bones Jones that has even beat Cormier. You can't, because there isn't one. Name a guy that you can look at and say, oh, this guy will beat Cormier. It's almost impossible to find one. If you didn't have a John Bones Jones around, people would be looking at Cormier and saying, one of the best, I'll say that right now, he's one of the best light heavyweights in history. If there's no Jones around, they could be saying he is the best, greatest light heavyweight in history. And then you take into account that he fought for a period of time as a heavyweight, never lost whatsoever, never lost. He moved to light heavyweight because Cormier did not want to fight Cain Velasquez, which is one of his best friends. So he moved down to light heavyweight. And all he did when the light heavyweight is dominate, fight amazingly, and be a really amazing champion who has been willing to fight all comers. And that includes Jones. You know, a lot of guys would just, you know, take it and just say, you know, Jones is a better man. He has been training, and he's training every day, trying to get better so that he can beat Jones. And he really does believe he can beat Jones. Now, I don't think he can beat Jones, but you can tell he believes it. And I respect him for that. Now, my number two fighter, and that is Demetrius Johnson. Demetrius Johnson, who might I add, just signed a new contract with UFC, a new 8-fight deal, which I say congratulations to you. Overdue, definitely deserved. And I'm happy that he's going to be in the UFC for a long time to come. He has fought, if you're in his weight class, he's willing to fight you. Not only is he willing to fight you, he will make it look easy when he fights you. I do think he's going to break Anderson Silva's record. He's going to go down in history as, you know, he's a Hall of Famer. He's going to be the flyweight all-time greatest flyweight fighter in history. Demetrius Johnson, you know, I tip my hat to you. He's just an impressive fighter. And now my number one, which is no shock, my number one fighter, pound for pound, is the light heavyweight champion. And no offense, Cormier, but he has not lost his title. He is John Bones Jones, who has just been, you know, he's just been a force. Even against OSP, with everything that's going on in his life, you know, spending time in jail, stuff with his mom, he's still been able to handle business, and he made quite easy work of OSP. He's fought everybody in the light heavyweight division. I don't want to see him. A lot of people are trying to pressure him into going up to the heavyweight division. I don't want to see that because I think we're looking at greatness in the light heavyweight division. And with the heavyweight division, anyone could get lucky anytime. And I would just like to see Jones stay at the light heavyweight division, dominate, and just go down in history as the all-time great, which I think he could at the light heavyweight division. But that concludes my top five pound-for-pound rankings for men's mixed martial arts. Thank you for tuning in. And remember to always follow us. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can go to our website at www.gsmcpodcast.com. And also, you can always download us on iTunes. Good night, and thank you very much.